So yeah, everyone in here is a teenager, and they can introduce themselves.
I'm Arielle. I'm a sophomore at the Liberty School.
I am Dylan. I am a senior at Mount Desert Island High School.
I'm Christine. I'm a senior at MDI High School.
I'm Lindsay, and I'm a junior at Hamden Academy.
And I'm Anna Savage, and I'm a junior who also attends Mount Desert Island High School. So tonight we are talking about activism and how teenagers can get involved with what's going on in the world. And we've all done a little bit of research with what's going on in the world. So I think we're going to start with immigration rules.
Also, sorry guys, this is a call-in show. Sorry, that was too loud. And if you'd like to call in, you should call 1-800-643-6273. And we'd especially like to hear from young adults tonight. I mean, no. Or the real number, which I just gave you. I think that would also work, but it would call the outside number. Is 1-866-625-9378. That's 1-866-625-WERU. Sorry, I gave the wrong number first.
That's all right. We all like hearing numbers. So, yes, our good, wonderful person, Dylan, here has done a lot of, or not, not a lot, he's done research about immigration laws, because that's a really big issue that's going on right now.
Yeah. Not necessarily, not so much the immigration laws, but the strike that's happening.
Right.
I mean, that certainly pertains to youth. I mean, it pertains to everybody in the country. So, yeah, a little bit about the strike. I couldn't really find any current statistics on how many.
Even though it's such a big issue, that's kind of.
Well, yeah. I mean, I didn't look too hard.
They don't want to be really out there about.
Mm. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
Hi, I'm an illegal immigrant.
So it was organized for May 1st by the Immigrant Solidarity Network. And there was expected to be about 300,000 immigrants boycotting their jobs. And it's been a really, really interesting issue because there's so many different views on it that, you know, some believe that it's ineffective, that it's not going far enough, and some believe that it's not affecting them at all. Others, you know, are against illegal immigration, obviously, mm-hmm. So they oppose it altogether. It's just a really, really interesting issue that's pretty big currently, and there's a lot of different sides to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really, I think it's really, really interesting because it's, I mean, it's obviously it's the first time this has happened, and it kind of seems like it's fairly decent democracy, if you ask me. I think,
right.
I mean, 300,000. And apparent, I think out of out of most of the immigrants, 70% of those are Mexican.
Oh wow!
So it'll be a huge statement for Mexican immigrants, certainly.
Wow.
But I don't know if you guys have heard, you know, anything more about it.
Well, I know that the protests haven't been very well covered. I think that the one in Chicago recently was the largest in Chicago's history, and it didn't even make the popular news.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I saw a cartoon the other day that had Native Americans standing on the shores of the U.S., and then it had, like, the Mayflower coming in, and the Native Americans were saying to each other, they don't look very documented to me, or something like that. And, yeah, I just thought that was interesting. It was a good point.
Yeah, the fact that our country is based on immigration, that's how we got here.
Yeah.
If you guys could do something about immigration, like, I don't know, what would you guys do about immigration if you could, like, if you were suddenly the king of the world and someone said, do something about immigration, what would you do? I guess my real question is, what's the big problem with it? Like, I mean, it's a huge controversial issue, but why do you think it's become such an awful...
I think... Can I go?
Yeah, go.
I think that the reason that the government doesn't want or wants stricter immigration policy or wants to keep it the way that it is because the labor is cheaper if the labor is undocumented.
Right.
So yeah. That just is why they're doing this to me anyways. Go ahead.
I've heard a few people, I mean, you know, just with talking about it with different people, some said that, you know, they feel like this whole, the way it's a pretty big issue, it's almost kind of distracting from the war, which I'm not entirely sure about because, I mean, you know, Bush did say in a speech that, you know, he urged immigrants to continue about their daily lives and not boycott. So he must have some interest in them not boycotting to distract us from the war. But I'm not sure. But
good.
Well, it's hard. I mean, you asked, like, if we could do anything, what would we do? And it's hard because I don't think we see very many illegal immigrants around here, and it doesn't affect our lives. So it's hard to have the motivation or ideas or anything to go out and be active about whatever side we're on. Or,
well, I mean, there really are a lot of immigrants around here, blueberry rakers in particular, that I don't know if they're illegal. I don't know that much about it, but it is a huge problem and they're very mistreated. And that's like, that's just around here locally how it goes on.
And we're not really, like, we don't see that because we're...
I do. I've always been brought up around it because my mom was, like, a social worker for migrant workers, but... Mm-hmm. So it's, like, I've always been aware of, like, the problem, and I guess that sort of leads into our next topic, but
That is interesting because I've always known that there were immigrants, you know, in the blueberry fields when you drive by in the summer and you can see the... you know, the workers in the little shacks that they all stay in. And, and, you know, just growing up and seeing that, I never, you know, pieced it together that, you know, what was actually going on. I mean, it just seemed like, you know, these people had you know, bad jobs and, you know, it stunk that they had to stay in these little shacks.
Yeah.
But, I just found that really interesting when, you know, and then all of a sudden recently, you know, it's pushed in our faces.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What I find interesting is that we're breeding a new type of racism because it's been sent to the American public and the American youth that these jobs are below us. And that's why, because, like, we don't take these jobs because they don't pay. And they don't pay because these corporations can find people who will do them for less money. And it gives us sort of the air that we are above these people because they do the jobs that we don't. Well, and I think that that's completely ridiculous.
Yeah, it's not even less money. It's just unsafe working conditions.
Right.
Like, my mom has this friend that moved here from Costa Rica and is living in New York City, and she's doing this terrible work in, like, someone's basement with totally, like, unhealthy chemicals she's breathing in all the time, and it's because she's undocumented, she can't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. It's, like, it's just sweatshops in the U.S. that are, like, protected. They're protecting corporate interests, and the more constricted that the laws get, the more people will be illegal in the U.S. or the more they'll be driven to be hidden. So they'll just continue to hide more and have less and less workers' rights.
Mm-hmm.
And they come here because, I mean, that kind of situation is better than the extreme poverty they're already living in. And so, like, the promise of working in America just is a better situation. Yeah.
That's what I find really interesting because especially in Mexico after NAFTA, and that just, you know, screwed over so many citizens in Mexico as far as jobs and just took away so many jobs, and then all of a sudden, you know, we'll take away their jobs, but we won't give them jobs. You know, we won't let them come here. And if they do, then they're exploited horribly.
Mm-hmm. I think people don't understand that when these immigrants come and they take these horrible jobs, we as Americans look at them and say, why would you leave your country to come and work in such a horrible condition? It's just that people don't understand that they're leaving even worse conditions in their own country. And people just don't understand that and just look at them or look down on them, I should say.
As a related topic, Ariel, you did some research, or you know quite a bit about the sweatshop labor. And what's going on with that? Like, can you talk about it?
I haven't been that involved with it lately. I used to be quite involved with PICA, which is Peace Through Inter-American Community Action up in Bangor. I was part of their youth group. We did anti-sweatshop organizing in the youth. In the school system in Bangor, we got them to pass a sweat-free purchasing policy.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we didn't. Okay. There's a lot of stuff going on with that. There are a lot of people organizing around here against that. There's a cooperative in Nicaragua, I believe, or El Salvador, I can't remember which. I think it's pretty common. There's one in Chiapas. Just all over in Central America, people in the U.S. have been bringing up goods that these, I think mostly their women's cooperatives have been making, like just the ancient arts, like just really cool embroidery, and bringing them up and selling them here for much more than they could get down there, and then sending back all of the money to them.
I had a really, a kind of related experience. When I was in Costa Rica, I stayed with this at this Indian reservation, and we stayed with these host families, and these people would make these really, really beautiful masks, and like that's part of their culture, and they've been doing it for forever, and they knit these really beautiful like handmade bags, like hand woven. They dye the yarn there, like on the reservation, and so there's so much effort put into it. And then you go to buy some of what
it's like $3.
Yeah, like I bought a bag for like $8, and then we found out that a lot of American people are buying these masks and these goods for really cheap and then selling them for so much more. Like there's this one guy who was making a 6-foot totem pole. He was being paid, and it's like incredibly like amazing carving and painting, and every painting is like perfectly exact to what the animal would look like in real life, and he was being paid like $800 for it, and a woman was planning on selling it for like $2,000.
Yeah, it's absurd. We're just exploiting people no matter where they are, but what I'm talking about is actually like being fair to the people. So there's some of that going on. I don't know if any of you know what Adbusters is. It's this magazine, but they made like an anti-Nike shoe, which they were originally trying to put in, have it made in non-sweatshop conditions in China, but they couldn't find any factories in China that would make it sweat-free. So they ended up doing it in somewhere in Central America. But it's like organic and like not a whole ton of chemicals in it.
Shoe.
Yeah. Well, it's organic hemp and I think organic rubber, and it's sweat free. And like just there's a lot of stuff going on. It's pretty easy to find. Again, the number to call in is 1-866-625-9378. If you have anything to say about activism that you would like to bring to people's attention.
We'd like to hear your views, or like what you've done, or what you have planned to do,
or ways for people to get involved.
Yeah, right.
We were before the show here. We were looking at a few websites, and one of them was this pretty cool. It had a bunch of like little subversive, like protest tools that you can use, and it was really cool, and it was just a bunch of little things, but I thought it was really, really interesting, like writing on money,
oh, I love reading what's written online.
Yeah.
It's so much fun.
You know, like it's a federal offense, but it'll always, you know, when you write a message on money, it'll always be there forever and ever. You know, hundreds of people will see it.
There was one that I really liked. It was like, you buy a bunch of those little toy army guys and write on them, bring me home, and then you can leave them in public places.
That's a really cool idea.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool.
That's really
too.
Cool.
All sorts of little things you can do. What was that website?
It was mouthswideopen.org.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very cool. Lindsay, you did research on genetic engineering.
Yeah, genetic engineering, organic foods, that kind of thing. I actually interviewed a guy that I work with named Robert. I don't know if we're playing that now or...
Okay, I'm
getting a nod, so I think we are. I am here with Robert Schick. He is the produce manager here at the Natural Living Center. And I decided to ask him a few questions. He himself is an organic farmer, and I thought he'd be a good person to interview. So, Robert, why did you decide to become an organic farmer?
Healthier for the planet, healthier for ourselves, and that's pretty much the main reason. It's just a healthier way of sustaining the earth.
And you are a certified vegan. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
I am a certified vegan, which means that I'm a vegetarian that doesn't eat any dairy or eggs or anything along that line. And pretty much raw foods.
Raw foods. Very cool. Do you predict an organic foods movement coming anytime soon? I know you work in a health food store. Do you see any increasing business or interest in this sort of field?
I have, and statistics show that organic food is increasing by 20% every year.
That's pretty impressive.
We've seen quite an increase over the last 6 months here at the Natural Living Center in produce. I would say, without having the exact figures, somewhere between 13 and 15% increase in organic produce.
That's really cool. How would you call people to action about buying organic foods as opposed to genetically modified foods, plants, that sort of thing? How would you do that?
I would say that genetically engineered foods, no one knows what the future will be with genetically engineered foods. The biggest thing that that people really don't know about genetically engineered foods is a scientific term called pleiotropy, which means that when you're transferring genes from one organism to another, the hope of the biotechnologists is that they will express themselves in one way that they've discovered. But if you know anything about pleiotropy, you know that they can express themselves in many ways, and no one knows all the different ways that they can express themselves.
So an uncertain future, that definitely does pose a problem. Anything else you'd like to add to call people to action? Or
buy, grow local, eat as much organic and beyond as you can.
And that was an interview done by Lindsay with Robert.
Robert, yes. I think we have a caller.
We do have a caller, though.
So. You're on the air.
Yes, you are on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
I dare 150,000 products of American education. I dare 150,000 to just say, no, please bring me home. I love your image of the toy soldiers.
Oh, yeah.
Those soldiers are nothing but toys in Halliburton's hands.
It's very symbolic.
It is very symbolic.
Your toy soldier image tickled my fancy. Thank you, girls.
Thank you.
And you can go to that website,
MindsWideOpen.org. And there are more ideas.
Well, and yeah, and it tells more about that toy soldier movement.
I don't know. That's a really cool idea. Such a clever idea.
And you could leave them anywhere, too.
Yeah.
Restaurant.
And I really don't think you can get arrested for
leaving toys in places.
And it's just like a reminder to people every day. Like, yeah. I forget about the war and everything, but yeah, it's just a little reminder.
So yeah, we should second that dare.
Yes, all you youth listening. Yeah, and there's got to be a way that we can document it online somewhere to do like.
We can start a website.
It'll
take a picture of it.
like on Zoom, how all the kids say how many things that they've done.
No, you could have like you could take pictures of all of the little toy soldiers you put up in different places. So you can see one like. I don't know, in some public bathroom, like you said, and like on a fence somewhere.
Yeah.
Another cool thing is, I've seen them before for different things, but fake money, and you leave it on the street.
Uh-huh.
And so one side, it looks like a real dollar bill, and so people are like, oh, $5 on the street. And they pick it up and turn it over, and there's a message
about something
inside of it. I think you have to custom make it, obviously. Yeah. Well, not custom make money. We're not in that business. Anyway...
It'd be kind of sweet if we were, though.
Moving on.
Yeah, so what was that, 150,000? Is that what he said?
Yes.
People to get toy soldiers and put them up all over the state of Maine and wherever
in
you
the
can
world.
Hear, wherever you can hear this broadcast.
We dare you.
We dare you.
We double dog dare you.
You have
we triple double dog dare you. Yeah, you have to
bring
no
out the big guns.
And
send us a picture. If you do.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure you can email it to WERU.
news@weru.org. I'm glad I can read Amy's lips.
So if you do that, send us pictures, and then we will share them with the world.
On our radio show.
Yes.
We'll tell you what they look like.
Yes, I think that's an excellent idea.
So let's move on to another topic.
Well, why don't we go back to genetic engineering since we didn't really finish that.
I don't know. I started working at a health food store like a couple months ago, and I don't know. I've been vegetarian, or I went veggie like a year or so ago, and I kind of got into this, and I started researching it, and there's just, like Robert said, there's so much that's uncertain. People are just kind of like playing with fire, and genetically modified foods just really aren't all they are cracked up to be. I don't know why we're pursuing these or anything like that. What do you guys think? I'm kind of rambling here, so someone want to help me out?
I'm really frightened. But the future of foods is a really good, or the future of food, rather, is a really good documentary. It's made by Deborah Coons Garcia. We watched it in a class I had last year, and it's about genetic engineering, and I think, I don't know, I can't really remember. I watched it so long ago. But it's still, like, being publicly shown. People really like it a lot. I think it's being publicly shown sometime soon.
I have another random Costa Rica story. Okay. Hopefully this does actually pertain to what you're talking about. But I heard while I was there that most of the bananas grown in Costa Rica are shipped to America, and that America has, like, the greatest population or, like, the greatest consumption of bananas ever. Like, we're the country that eats the most bananas.
You wouldn't think that to look at us.
No, you wouldn't. And I guess, I don't know, there was some statistic that, like, the average American has, like, 3.5 bananas a week, or I don't remember exactly what it was, but I thought it was kind of funny. Anyway, genetic engineering. I heard that in, like, when the farmers are growing the bananas, they genetically engineer them to look more appealing because I guess Americans want straighter bananas. And I thought that was so weird.
Wait,
like,
the farmers genetically engineer them?
Yeah.
You mean the farmers, like, breed them?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's not genetic engineering.
Well, no, but they, like, put stuff into the bananas as they're growing. They're not natural bananas. They're straighter. It's just... Why do you do that to a banana if all you're doing is making it straighter?
like they wax apples to make people like them more, and they put stuff, they genetically engineered tomatoes to make them redder so that people would like them. Mm-hmm.
So a lot of this is just based on appeal and how it looks.
I think that's really weird.
What I've, in agriculture and growing plants, it's really, really cool to look at all the different philosophies about it, because there's even, I guess you could call it a movement, but just a philosophy about not using fertilizer, and not barely even altering the state of your garden at all. The fellow that I do gardening with was telling me all about this, and it's basically just like, you know, not even altering the land, like not even digging up the area of the garden, and just completely letting the nutrients from the weeds and things feed the plants and the plants. And there's definitely a lot more to it, but it's really, really interesting, because if you think about genetically modified plants and things, and how they must be better because they taste better and look better, but yet there's so many facets to agriculture and growing things that we just completely don't even know about. Mm-hmm. And
well, genetically engineered plants are often also either sprayed with pesticides or have pesticides cloned into them, like the Roundup Ready rape seeds, which are canola seeds, is what makes canola oil. They're genetically modified so that they're not killed by Roundup, which is a chemical, it's a pesticide, so that everything else will be killed by the Roundup but not the canola plants.
Yeah.
And if you are a farmer who has found, like, probably all the farmers out there already know this, but if you're found with, if one of your plants has crossbred with this Roundup Ready canola, then you can be taken to court by Monsanto and sued for a lot of money. That happened. What's that farmer's name?
I don't remember. Yeah,
fellow
from
Canada.
The case.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what you're saying.
Yeah, trying to read her lips, but
yes, I'm trying to read Amy's lips. However, none
Percy
of us
Smizer.
That.
Percy Smizer.
Thank you, Amy.
Thanks, Amy.
He came to Mount Desert Island High School last year, I think.
Yeah, I think he came to the Common Ground Fair, too.
Probably.
He was not happy.
I didn't think I would be happy either.
Yeah, I would not be happy. But canola is one of the, like, canola is one of the most pesticided oils. So a good alternative to canola oil if you don't want to eat a lot of pesticides is safflower oil, which is easier to find organic. Canola oil is usually sprayed heavily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess the next topic.
Oh, actually, first of all, sorry, I'm going to interrupt you.
Yeah.
But I'd like to remind everyone that this is a call-in show, and the number is 1-866-625-9378 or 1-866-625-WERU. You are listening to the Teen Talk Show, and we are talking about activism in today's youth. So, Christy, go.
Okay. I was just going to talk about my senior exhibition that I just did. It was just an art exhibit that I did to raise global awareness and kind of shift our thinking in my school to more global issues, just to get our minds off of our own silly worries, I guess, and just because I felt like there was a lack of just awareness about certain issues. And we're going to talk later about what's going on in Uganda, and so just to let you know. But my mentor was a local artist named Robert Shetterly, who is going to call in soon and talk about something that he just did a couple weeks ago. He went to Texas to Camp Casey.
Mm-hmm.
He'll call in later. I just wanted to encourage people our age to do things that can just raise awareness about things they're concerned about. like so many of these issues we covered are.
Mm-hmm. What exactly is Camp Casey?
Well, he'll call in and let us know anytime now. So if you're out there, Robert Shetterly, and you can call in anytime, we'd love to hear about that from you.
The number is 1-866-625-9378. And we're going to go to a short break right now.
Well, not right now, because I think we've got Mr. Shetterly calling in. But after his phone call, we will be sure to give you guys a break. Okay. Waiting for a phone call. Hmm.
Dylan and I have to leave. Have a good show, guys. Okay.
So long, guys.
See you guys.
Have a good show, Dylan. Dylan's going to play music. And we have a caller. So if you're with us, then you're on the air.
Yep, I'm here.
All right.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. We were just wondering if you could tell us about what you did a couple weeks ago.
Sure. Am I on the air now?
Yes, you are.
I just turned off my radio, so I didn't hear myself.
Great.
Well, first, Christy, it's nice to talk to you, and I'm really glad you're doing this program. I certainly would encourage young people to be doing as much as they can these days about all these big issues, whether it's environmental, immigration, the war, all these things need lots of attention, and your voices are so important. So thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
I went to, let me go back a little bit. About a year ago, not quite a year ago, but in July of last year, I painted a portrait of Cindy Sheehan for this project of mine, America to Tell the Truth portrait series. And then right after that, in August, she went and established her camp outside of Bush's ranch in Crawford, Texas. Mm-hmm. She named it Camp Casey for her son, Casey, who was killed.
I remember hearing about this.
On April 4th, 2004, outside of Baghdad. He'd only been there for 5 days. And, her demand of Bush was that he come out of the ranch where he was riding his dirt bike and cutting brush with his chainsaw and talk to her about what the noble cause was that her son needed to die for. Mm-hmm. And as we all know, he refused to do that. And by refusing, he, in a sense, raised the issue much higher and gave a lot of prominence to Cindy Sheehan. And she is now, as we all know, one of the strongest and most forthright members of the anti-war movement. But I was not able to go last August to Camp Casey to see what that was all about. And at Easter, they were back there again for the third time. Mm-hmm. And my friend Doug Hendricks, who's in Veterans for Peace and lives on Deer Isle and also teaches in the Peace Studies Department up at UMO, suggested that we make the trek to Crawford, and so we flew down there and then to Dallas-Fort Worth and drove out to Camp Casey. And it was a marvelous experience. There was this huge circus tent, it's about 150 feet long and 50 feet wide, and maybe as many as 100 or 500 people there sort of coming and going, and a terrific list of speakers and lots of suggestions about activism, lots of sort of morale-raising events and lots of incisive analysis of what's wrong with the country and how to fix it. So, and then, of course, Cindy was kind of, her group, which is Gold Star Families for Peace, Gold Star refers to the medal that families are given who lose a child in war. And so she had started this organization called Gold Star Families for Peace, and a number of parents and brothers and sisters, et cetera, who were in those families spoke about their experience, about their children, what had happened to them. And then there's another group called Military Families Speak Out, whose relatives have not been killed in war but are participating in their, these family members are very upset because they're against the war. And so that was good, and then there was lots of other things. What more can I talk to you about?
Anything you'd like to talk to us about?
Okay, I'll just say tell you one more story about being there. One of the people who was the most impressive as a speaker was Joseph Lowry, Reverend Joseph Lowry. He was one of the founders of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference with Martin Luther King, and was reputed to have been King's mentor, in a sense, in teaching him about the ways of civil disobedience and nonviolence. And he was, Lowry, just a month or so ago at Coretta Scott King's funeral, was the one who confronted Bush, who had gone to the funeral, about the war and about the policies that have led to the war, which was, you know, we rarely get these chances these days to confront a policymaker directly. And so, you know, when we do, it's of the utmost importance that we, you know, speak truth to power. And that's what Joseph Lowry had done. And that's, of course, what Cindy Sheehan was trying to do by establishing Camp Casey in the first place. And what gave it its moral and political power was the fact that she was, you know, just this one lone woman at first who was grieving for her son who, you know, camped in a ditch outside of his ranch and said, come on out and tell me why my son needed to die. But the thing that the point that Joseph Lowry made in Texas that I found extremely important, and it has to do a lot with what you guys are doing on the radio, he was saying all of our fractured interest groups that are appealing for political change about one issue or another, you know, whether it's about the environment or about gay rights or about civil rights or about immigration issues or work-related issues or, you know, toxics or whatever it is, we need to all come together and speak with one voice about some of the biggest issues. And he said, one is just for political strength, but the point he was making was that the same people who are racists and warmongers and elitists and are destroying the environment and are, you know, refusing to pay people fair wages and are homophobic, they're all the same folks. And, you know, they show us a different face all the time and they get different groups sort of, you know, speaking up against them. But we need to confront them as a single group because they are the same people. And then he went on as a religious person to talk about how these people who need to be opposed are worshiping a god which he doesn't understand. And he said it's the god of exploitation. It's the god of warmongering. It's the god of elitism. It's the god of hatred. And this god is one we have to oppose. So, and he was just rollicking good fun while he spoke there. He was funny. He was very earthy. He was warm and incredibly sharp, and he's 84 years old and seemed to have more energy than all the younger people there. That was terrific.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So you do art displays as a way of getting your voice heard, or a way of activism. Have you found that to be successful? Like, do you think that works as a way to get issues out into society?
It has worked, and it works for a lot of artists for different reasons. I mean, the way it's worked for me is partly the art itself, and then partly the access it's given me to talk to people around the art. I mean, because there's now a book of the portraits that I've painted published, and we've also written a curriculum to go with it about how to teach history through the lives of people who have fought so hard for American ideals. I get invited into lots of schools to talk to kids. I mean, I've been at Liberty School. I've been at MDI. I've been these places. And so, and I go to schools all over the country doing this. And so, yes, the artwork can work that way. And I'm finding, because of what I'm doing, I keep hearing from and about artists who are doing somewhat similar kinds of things in other parts of the country and to similar kind of effect. So, you know, but it depends on it, the thing that's so important about it, and I noticed this is, you know, when I was working with Christy as her mentor, it's what she was doing too, is what you can't do and get a voice in using art is just be cynical and depressive. What you have to do is be, I mean, you can be very angry, but you have to be positive and find a way to use the art to communicate with people rather than you know, just to preach to the choir or cut off argument because you're so, you know, damn angry about mm-hmm. something. Or just cynical. You know, you don't want to be that. You've got to suggest through your work that there's a way to talk and there's a way to change things. And that then the art can be a catalyst for change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, when I had seen your art when you came to our school, like, that's what kind of inspired me to do my whole exhibit, and that's how I contacted you and got all inspired about that. And so I think that your art is powerful in that way, that it inspires other people to do stuff like that. And so thanks for that. I have another question for you.
Thank you.
You said earlier how it's hard to get the chance to talk to people who are in power, and that when you do have that chance, you should go with it because that's what's will make a difference. And you, I know, like a month ago or so, you tried to talk to Senator Collins. Would you like to talk about that at all?
Yeah, sure. We a number of groups in Maine have been appealing for, well, several years now for Senator Collins and Senator Snow to hold public town office and town meetings in which issues like the war could be discussed. They have been reluctant, afraid, unwilling, whatever, you know, it's hard to know exactly to say what their motivation is, except that they haven't done it. And they have resisted again and again, and we've made many, many polite appeals for them to do that because we think that they, the business of democracy has to be discussed in an open way, in an open place, where people cannot just, I mean, both those senators say, well, people come as individuals and to us in our offices and relay their feelings about the war, about the environment and stuff. And we say, no, that isn't good enough. You know, the community needs to listen to each other as they talk to you, and all of them see your response and try to influence you if they can. You know, this has to be done in an open way, that you, Senator Collins or Senator Snow, are a public servant. You know, we're not crawling to you on our knees to be heard. We're demanding that you, our servant, listen to us. Mm-hmm. You know, they won't do that. And so what we did, besides getting arrested in both of their offices occasionally, Senator Collins, 6 weeks or so ago, was giving a talk at the University of Maine under the auspices of the Margaret Chase Smith Center. And her talk was called The Ethics of Conscience. And, you know, because Margaret Chase Smith is a great example of an ethical and conscientious senator, and she was attempting to take on herself the mantle of, you know, of Margaret Chase Smith. Many of us object to that very strongly because she's often been anything but conscientious or ethical, especially in relationship to the Bush administration and the war. We wanted her to admit that she had been lied to by the administration and to denounce that policy. Well, anyway, what we did was stood up at her in the question period of her talk and made a statement about just to that effect, saying, you know, the American people, its ideals, and its soldiers have been betrayed by this policy. And unless you want to be complicit with it and complicit in war crimes, we're asking you to denounce it. What was curious was this was a, by and large, a Republican crowd there to hear her talk. And even though when I stood up and made this statement, at first there were shouts of, oh, you know, sit down, shut up, all that stuff. It was very predictable. When I went on and actually people listened to me, at the end, a lot of the audience applauded. Susan Collins chose to act like it never happened. She just was stone-faced, and then she asked the young woman who was reading the questions to go on and ask the next question. She didn't reply. The point is, here was an opportunity to confront a person in power and lay the issue out in front of them in a public place. You know, they had denied us the opportunity to do it in a more polite way. Mm-hmm. And when that is denied, you have to find another way. And it actually had an effect. I mean, it made the front page of the paper, and our issues were stated in print. And obviously it had stung her a little bit, because for the next few weeks, little papers all over the state ran editorials in defense of her. But I suspect her office had something to do with that.
Thank you very much. That's very helpful to our topic. And it's good to hear about all that. So thanks for your comments, Sam, for calling in.
Oh, thanks, Christine. Thanks to all of you. You know, I travel a lot, and so I'm always hearing people say, well, where are the kids? You know, why aren't the kids out there in the streets? Why aren't they doing stuff? But, it's great that you are doing a program like this and raising these issues, and I would suggest you all to keep it up and push it up mm-hmm. another notch, you know. And, I mean, make appointments at your senator's offices and go ask why, energy producers in the Midwest are allowed to load our water with mercury. Things like that. I mean, these questions need to be confronted, and I think young people confronting them may have more effect than some of us old guys.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
The number to call is 1-866-625-9378 or 1-866-625-WERU. That was Robert Shetterly on the phone. And we're just, okay, see ya. One of our hosts is leaving.
Yes, Lindsay is going to get ready for her senior prom, or junior prom, I suppose.
Bye. Bye. Okay.
You did your art thing. Sorry, I'm blanking on a word. Your exhibit to raise awareness about the genocide in Uganda, right?
Yeah. It's just a way for me to communicate with people, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff, and get them to pay attention. And another thing that people have done about that issue, I mean, it's in the news now, but it's an ongoing issue, is my sister, she's in college. She goes to school at Gordon, which is near Boston. She was involved in a global night commute, and that was something that happened all over the nation. And in different countries, too, just to raise awareness about the situation in Uganda. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to have her call in soon or anytime, Mari, if you're out there, and you can just call in when you get a chance, because I know she's listening.
I hope so.
Yeah, she's listening online, actually, from her school.
Cool.
The situation in Uganda is something that people don't know about. I mean, like, I've been talking to my friends about it, and they're like, what are you talking about? How come I didn't know about this? And it's because the war is kind of preoccupying people, mm-hmm. I think. And so, I think she's on the line right now, so.
I think so. Perhaps.
Yeah, Mari, are you there? Hey, you're on the air.
Hi, Christy. Someone else, hi.
Hello.
This is Maria.
So you were involved in something last weekend to raise awareness about the genocide in Uganda. And can you tell us why you were doing that?
I'll just tell you guys a little bit about what is going on in Uganda.
That'd be great.
I wouldn't call it genocide. What's going on is, for the past 20 years, the Lord's Resistance Army, that's what it's called, it's basically a rebel group. They've been trying to overthrow the government of Uganda. And what they do is they abduct children and they force them to work as soldiers in just really brutal conditions. I don't consider myself an expert on this issue, but I know that most people don't know anything about it. They've never heard about it. So I'm just one of maybe the few people who does know about it. And just, it's crazy because it's been going on for so long.
20 years or so.
Yeah, and the world really doesn't know about it. The Ugandan government has been keeping it a secret. Other governments have just looked away. And it, what it's doing it, just to the children of the country is really just devastating. What happens is they, a lot of them travel for miles each night to a common public place to sleep together and be safe from being abducted.
Wow.
And, yeah, it's just the crazy thing about it is that they're children who are, they're involved in this war, but it's not them. They're captives of it. They're victims of the war, and they're being forced to fight it. And it's hard to talk about and explain. But what we did this weekend was all across the country and across the world, there's what was called the Global Night Commute. And what we did was basically sort of in honor of the children who travel far for every night, we walked or took public transportation to the Boston Commons, and we were going to stay there overnight, but we didn't get a permit for it. But what we did was we were there. There were over 1,000 people,
wow.
Which was really amazing. A bunch of people from my college went. There were about over 100 of us. From my school, we walked to the train and then took it into the city and hung out on the commons just with all the other hundreds of people and wrote letters to our senators and to the president. And we also did an art project. So I know you. I was just listening to Robert Shetterly talking about his artwork and how it communicates and just things to people, and so that's another way. I really think that art does speak to people, and that was one of the things that they were trying to get across. But mm-hmm. Just having so many people together on the commons, people would come up to us and ask us what was going on. There were little children, like 3 years old, there. And just, it was really neat to see how many people supported it, and hopefully things like that will get the word out, because a lot of people just are unaware of what's going on, and I think that's the biggest problem. And so I think you guys talking about activism, that's really what activism is just getting people to learn about what is going on in the world and hopefully do something about it. And there really are such great opportunities to talk to your senators or congress people, write letters. And I used to be kind of like nervous about writing to my representatives and senators, but because I thought, you know, I don't know that much about the issue. Like, they're the ones who know everything about public policy and everything. And what
that's
do
what
I
we
know?
Like to think.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just in college, and so like, what do I know? But honestly, if it's something that you care about and that you've studied, chances are that you do know more about it than whoever is in office. I mean, it's true. I took a class on environmental topics last semester and did a research paper on drilling in the Arctic mm-hmm. and wrote to my senators as a result of that. And that was, my professor told me, she said, you probably know more about this than they do, so you have every right to write to them and call them or let them know how you feel. So,
right.
And, oh, yeah, don't be afraid to do that.
And one of the projects you did while you were on the commons with all those people was write letters to mm-hmm. the president. And can you tell us about that?
Yeah, we were just given sheets of paper and pencils to handwrite the letters because obviously mm-hmm. we're outside and we, you know, couldn't type them or make them look really professional. But the ones we sent to the president were all sent, you know, together. There were protests across the country, across the world. There were, oh, I forget how many, I think over 70,000 people worldwide. And so hopefully President Bush got 70,000 letters from it. just to show how many people are supporting this. And that's what we did. And then the letter to my senators was a little more, like, in-depth. I'm hoping that they read it. I think that one will get more attention than the ones to the president, honestly. But, yeah. So, and the other things you guys were talking about, immigration and genetic engineering, those are, I'm so glad you guys are discussing those issues. The protest you mentioned that was on Monday, a bunch of people from my school went to that as well. I'm actually taking a class on immigration issues for a senior seminar. So I've learned a lot about what's been going on recently with that. So what happened on Monday, I don't know if you guys did learn about this, but it was called A Day Without the Immigrant Dollar. And so they're encouraging people, not just immigrants or recent immigrants, obviously we're all descended from immigrants mostly, but to just either not go to work or if that's not possible, to not spend any money throughout the day, which is kind of easy for me to do, but it just shows what how effective and how powerful the immigrant dollar is, the immigrant worker, and how our country can't really do without it. So, yeah, I was surprised at how much publicity that protest got. It was in Boston, so a bunch of people from my school went, but I had class, so I couldn't.
Oh, no. So. All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in. We have to wrap up the show pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, it's been great listening to you guys. Thanks for letting me talk to you.
Thanks for calling.
Okay.
So, yes, I would just like to remind all of our listeners that we are daring all of them to buy a bag of toy soldiers and write "Bring Me Home" or any little note that you would like to write on them and put them all over public places and send us pictures, because I think that's going to be really fun. I'd like to thank our listeners and our callers and Amy for doing all of our engineering today. Christy, is there anything you'd like to say before we leave?
It's possible for anyone, like kids our age, and it's hard to get people motivated sometimes, but I really think that if you're passionate about some issue, then you can make a difference. Mm-hmm. And I would just encourage everyone to see what they can do, I guess. Sorry.
Thank you again for listening, and we'll be on next month on the first Saturday of the month at 5:00 p.m.